Good afternoon, and welcome to this February chilly day of edition of Lambda Weekly. I'm Laurent Landis, and I'm here with Patty Fink, and here goes our regular host, David Tappet.
That was a wonderful introduction. Thank you.
Well, you're very welcome.
Well, we just ran in from Cathedral of Hope, the Reverend Frank Schaefer. Can I still call you the Reverend?
Absolutely, you may.
I mean, I feel comfortable enough to call you Frank, so we'll call you the Reverend, because we don't support that defrocking thing.
Of course not.
Frank Schaefer was defrocked as a minister in the Methodist Church in November. Was the defrocking in November?
The defrocking was actually in December, December 19th.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Just a couple of days before Christmas.
Yeah. He was here at Cathedral of Hope speaking at 9 and 11. I'm out of breath.
You are out of breath.
I am. Well, we ran. you're the one who should be out of breath, Frank, because you're the one who was up there. And I was just sitting there in the back. You'll be at Cathedral then at 5 o'clock today, right?
Yes, for a Q&A.
For a Q&A, mm-hmm. So if you'd like to sit and chat and whatever. His wife, Bridget, is here, and we're going to talk about that story. Let's do a little bit of pledge drive stuff.
It is pledge drive.
I'm going to leave that to the two of you.
Yeah, give us a call, 972-647-1893. Again, that's 972-647-1893. We got a couple of calls last week. We still need more. We still need you to do everything you can to help keep us on the air.
And you can call us at 972-647-1893. And KNON has been supporting Lambda Weekly, and we're the oldest, longest-running LGBT radio show anywhere in the United
States.
Anywhere
in the world.
And so KNON has supported us, and we need your support to help us stay on the air and to support KNON. We've been on the air for 30 years now, since 1983, and we'd like to make that 31. And we can only do that when our listeners call in.
Right.
And we have great pledge premiums. You can get all kinds of T-shirts and backpacks and koozies and you name it. You can get stuff. And if you're listening to the podcast later in the week, you can go to knon.org. and click on Pledge Now and pledge there and select your premiums and give us credit. If you can't spell Lambda Weekly to say that gay show or queer show,
we're not hard to find.
Just get it across, put LW. You can do that. But give us a call, 972-647-1893.
Doc is standing by waiting for your call.
And so is Josh.
And so is Josh. So
Josh is
and I also wanted too. I also wanted to add, where else locally are you going to hear in detail conversational local content about when we have great guests like this?
The
You're
Cathedral
just not.
Of Hope.
Well, on the radio. You're just not. You're just not. So,
at 5 o'clock today.
At 5 o'clock today. So if you want to keep this kind of programming on the air, and it is important to you, give us a call and help us keep that dialogue on the air. Again, 972-647-1893.
I want to get to this incredible story, because this is really a story of, Frank and Bridget are the parents every gay person should have. They chose their kids over church rules. Tell us how that even happened. You were not trying to flout church rules, really. You did this very privately.
That's correct. We did. I was very private about this, and I was not trying to be rebellious, but our son, when he came out as being gay, this was back in the year 2000, he shared with us at that point that it was a real struggle for him. He had cried himself to sleep many nights.
How old was he when he came out to you?
He was 17 or 18 when he came out, but he had at that point then shared how he had struggled in the past with this, and part of that was because he heard messages from his very own church, the United Methodist Church, that were hateful, and it brought him to the brink of despair, and even he considered suicide at one point. And so when he shared that with us, we just had to rally around him. And of course we love our son, and we said to him, look, we love you no matter what, and we affirm that you are a child of God just like everybody else. You were made in the image of God, just as you are, so be proud of it. And he actually had a struggle with that for the longest time. you know, he wasn't proud of himself, of who he was. He was actually very conservative in many ways, and he always had dreamt of the family, you know, the typical American dream, you know, the family, the traditional family, and, you know, the good job and all in the house and everything with it. So it was a struggle for him, and it took him many years to really become proud of who he was as a person.
Now, once your son found the love of his life and decided, you know, he wants to get married, you know, he could have chosen anybody to perform the wedding. How did it come about? Did he ask you? Did you offer?
No, he actually asked me. It was a phone call, I remember. He has actually shared in interviews that it was the hardest question he had ever asked anybody, because he knew that I could be in trouble, knowing about the church's position on gay marriage. But he did ask it anyway, because part of him said, well, I think my dad would be really sad if I hadn't asked him. So he did. He did ask me, and the answer was absolutely, son. There was no hesitation.
Mm-hmm. Now, one thing I want to make real clear was your church was in Pennsylvania. He lived in Massachusetts and was getting married in Massachusetts. So this wasn't something you were trying to throw in your church's face at all. You did it very privately, and it took 6 years before anybody noticed.
Yes, absolutely. It was done in Massachusetts, where gay marriage was legal at the time already. And we did it, as you said, in a restaurant. Never had any announcements in the papers. I never talked about it publicly in the church. I did let my superiors know. That's as far as it went. And I never heard a peep until last year, 6 years later, when a parishioner of mine actually filed a complaint against me.
Wow. I'm a recovering Southern Baptist. I'm actually wearing my you know, Baylor sweatshirt on the air. But I then changed over to become a Methodist. And can you explain for our listeners what the Methodist Church's policy is, the United Methodist Church's policy in the Book of Discipline, about what it is that you violated? What was this statute?
Right. So the United Methodist Church adopted in 1972 for the very first time some language that is discriminatory, by saying that we believe that the practice of homosexuality is not compatible with Christian teachings. From there, over the years, there were more and more laws adopted. Like, for instance, the first one was in 86, where it was no longer possible for gays and lesbians to become ministers in our church. And then a little bit after that, I think it was in 1996, the law was adopted that no United Methodist minister may perform a homosexual union service or a wedding service. And it was also not allowed to be done by any United Methodist church.
Hmm. Wow.
How has that affected the church? It seems to me like here in Dallas, there are the pro-marriage churches like
Grace United Methodist, North Haven,
and now Oaklawn United Methodist Church, which 25 years ago, they had a massive walkout. This church is right in the middle of the gay neighborhood, and the minister at the time announced that gays and lesbians were not welcome. And that was the start of our PFLAG group here, even, because it was a number of parents who walked out also and said, you know, if my kids aren't welcome, I'm not welcome.
We're always at our best when we're pissed off. So.
Yeah, exactly. Well, these were pissed off parents, too. So, but then there are other churches like Highland Park United Methodist Church, which doesn't support same-sex marriage or equality. Why isn't it okay in your church for the churches that are for it, the ministers who are for it, to do what they think is right? Because that's all anybody wants. Nobody wants to force a minister to do a wedding that they don't want to do. And the other churches, you know, no, I'm really not for it. I'm going to go to this church. Doesn't that make sense?
That would be an ideal world. However, we are not, as a church, as a denomination, we are not congregational in model. We are episcopal. Mm-hmm. So in other words, that means there's a bishop, and there are district superintendents, and all the properties owned by the denomination, by the annual conference, actually, not by the church itself. So there is a lot of control that's coming from the top, and that's been the problem. Now, they are actually reconciling churches. We call them reconciling, open and affirming churches that will do gay marriages, and there has to my knowledge, not ever been one church that was actually put on trial. Hmm. Which is good, you know.
Could they actually put a church on trial?
Theoretically, yes, huh. Because that's, you know, it clearly says in the discipline that United Methodist churches are not allowed to perform or to have the open their location for a gay marriage. But it hasn't happened, and I, to be honest with you, I can't even imagine how that would be done. How can you put a whole church, a whole congregation,
on trial?
Why
don't you file charges against 500 churches and force them to have a trial for each and every one of them?
Yes.
Talk about wanting a mess.
You know. Well, you know, I mean, if today corporations are people, I guess church congregations are people.
I guess so.
Churches are people.
For those of us who don't know, like, procedurally how it works in a church as far as when you put on trial, again... They found out 6 years after the fact. It had already been done. What is it that they wanted you to do, or did they even give you a choice before you were defrocked?
Yeah, okay. So there's some gossip there in the backstory. The whole thing actually came about because I had a falling out with my choir director, which eventually led to her resigning. Her son was actually the person who filed the complaint against me. And so when he was asked in the witness stand, so did this have anything to do with your mother's resignation? And he said, no, absolutely not. I just happened to learn about that fact of the wedding around that time, and I was so appalled. I filed a complaint, and now I find that very strange of a coincidence, to be honest with you. And
very
so
interesting
did most
timing.
People. Very interesting, yeah.
It wasn't just that he happened to hear about it. He traveled from Pennsylvania to Massachusetts, tracked down where the marriage had taken place, got a copy of the marriage license with the Reverend's signature.
So this isn't something that he just stumbled across?
No, definitely not. I don't think those licenses are available online or anything like that.
No, they're not.
So, and I actually I've heard, I mean, you know, again, I mean, this is the second source, but I've heard that he actually did travel to Massachusetts to obtain the license. So he probably took a couple of days vacation to get that.
So did they give you either or, like either you do this or you're defrocked?
Well, part of the negotiations that we call just resolution in the process are that the complainant can make conditions and can set conditions. And one of the conditions he did set was that, I'll forget about the complaint if you agree in writing never to do another gay marriage again. And that was actually only one of five conditions, but that was the one that I definitely couldn't fulfill, and so the negotiations were off.
Gotcha.
Well, that seems really preclusive, too. I mean, what if you were to sign that and, I guess, you know, give your word that you wouldn't do that again, and then the United Methodist Church came around to... you know, the 20th century. And, you know, it was going to be okay for everybody to do them. Then you would be committed. You'd given your word you would never do that. It seems
right
to me.
That's a very good point. I never even thought about that, but that's a very smart point to make. Yeah.
Well, that's kind of like what happened in New Mexico when all of these counties were starting to perform same-sex marriages. About 10 years ago, one county did start doing same-sex marriages. They were under court order not to perform them, which is why Sandoval County did not have same-sex marriage, whereas the counties around it did, even though they wanted to do it 10 years ago. Same nonsense logic.
Yeah. So that's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. We're coming up on a break. We need to talk pledge drive a couple of seconds. We're talking to the Reverend Frank Schaefer. His wife Bridget is here too. Best parents in the world. Frank Schaefer is the Reverend who was defrocked by the Methodist Church the end of last year. And we'll be talking with him just a little bit more. But it is Pledge Drive, and we do need people to call and support the oldest, longest-running gay and lesbian radio show on the air anywhere in the world. And old people like Laurent have been doing this for 30 years.
Mm-hmm. So ever since I was 10.
Ever since you were 5 years old. Right.
I've been doing it since about 3, uh-huh. You know. So.
And me being the youngest of all of you, I've been doing it since before I was born, but we have been on the air for 30 years. We need you to call us, 972-647-1893. The phone number disappeared from
Yeah, but you got it right.
I did get it right.
Oh, there it is.
It finally fell off is what happened. 972-647-1893. Operators are standing by. What are some of the lovely Pledge Drive premiums we have?
We have T-shirts. We have backpacks. We have my favorite. And if you're a longtime listener, you know I push this every Pledge Drive. That's the KNON apron. The apron for a $40 pledge, you get it's a heavy canvas apron. It's black with the white design. It says KNON, and they make lovely gifts. They make lovely re-gifts, you know. call in your pledge for $40. You can get the great KNON apron. For $50, we have lots of great commemorative T-shirts.
I have an apron story.
Oh, you do?
I was doing the show, a show I was filling in with somebody else on another show, and she was saying how, yeah, and these aprons, they're nice canvas on both sides, so when it gets dirty, you can just turn it over. And I said, or you could wash it.
Yeah, you can. And, of course, my favorite, of course, is the coffee mug. And what goes with coffee mug? Coffee. And we have coffee right here. House blend coffee that David says every time that we pick ourselves.
We do. We go out
the
to the slopes
of KNON.
KNON and 972-647-1893. That's 972-647-1893. We'll be right back with Reverend Frank Schaefer right after this.
KNON depends on listener support to stay on the air, and now is the time for you to help keep this show on the air. If you like what you're hearing and want to show your appreciation for great community radio, pick up the phone and call to make a pledge. Call 972-647-1893 or go online to KNON.org. Don't wait for someone else to do it. Without the support of our listeners, there won't be any community radio on the air in North Texas. So take a few minutes to make a pledge. Call 972-647-1893 or go online to KNON.org.
I'm Michael from UNT, and I listen to Lambda Weekly on KNON 89.3 FM.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. Once again, this is Pledge Drive Week, Metro 972-647-1893. That's 972-647-1893. Give us a call. We are talking to the Reverend Frank Schaefer. He is the Methodist minister who was defrocked at the end of last year. So when Tim came out to you in 2000, was he the first of your kids who came out?
He was. Just to clarify that question, I do have three gay children. Three out of my four children are gay.
See, yes. I said best gay parents.
See, this just proves it's got to be genetic.
Absolutely.
So what did you do to turn your kids gay?
That's a good question. If I only knew, because I could write a book on it, and then everybody could have gay children if they wanted to.
Just a couple of years ago, a neighbor of mine and I hooked up again on Facebook, and her father is still alive. He's in his late 80s, and several people on our block turned out to be gay, and he said the same thing. What was in the water on that street? So, all of us come right up together. But you do have a straight child, as far as you know.
As far as we know, yeah. It took him the longest time to come out as straight. This is what it took for him to come out as straight. Because I think he thought he was supposed to be gay because all of his siblings are gay. And so, you know, it took him quite a while. I mean, we could only speculate for a while there. He thought, oh, maybe we have four. Mm-hmm. But then he came out finally and said, I
started dating a girl, and it was like, what's up with that?
But you know what? Now that you know, you just let us know that you have two other gay children, it's all the more reason why you didn't sign that agreement. Because what if they in fact choose to get married one day and want you to perform their wedding?
That is very true. I mean, that was definitely on my mind, but I couldn't have signed it even if this had been the last gay marriage I had done for my children or for my son. I just knew I couldn't sign that. You know, my conscience just wouldn't allow me to sign that.
Mm-hmm. I just think it's very interesting. I didn't, you know, like to delve, you know, deep into the bowels of the logic of the United Methodist Church. I don't know, but do they allow the complainant in cases of, you know, across the board to develop terms that you would agree to? That just seems really odd to me.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah,
it does.
Yeah, but that's how it works. The complainant is the one that you negotiate with.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, so it's not the church that you negotiate with.
Well, the church was involved in the process, but he had to agree. You know, he had to sign off on the final agreement of the negotiation. So
it's interesting because, you know, when I grew up overseas in North Africa, and a lot of the legal system there is that, you know, if you've murdered someone or done stolen from a family or whatever, the family has to forgive you. Mm-hmm. You're in jail till they do. And, you know, the prosecutor does the prosecution job, but then the terms of how it plays out for a guilty verdict is up to the family. And that sounds like the same kind of level of justice that you would get in the United Methodist Church.
That's true. That's a very interesting
very
comparison.
Interesting.
Which country was that one? That was your Swiss part of your upbringing?
No, in Libya. I grew up in Libya.
Oh, okay, because I was going to say, in Libya, isn't it that you'd just be beheaded?
Well, I probably would.
You would.
I work in a legal field, and there's something called an intervener, which is a third party that intervenes on behalf of one of the parties, but they really have nothing to do with it. So, did you have anybody, any other reverends within the Methodist congregation that intervened and on your behalf, like took up for you?
Well, actually, several things. The negotiator in this case for the just resolution was actually the bishop herself, my bishop. So she was the one that sort of brokered the negotiations. But then we also had a mediator come in, actually a former federal mediator. He came in, you know, to have some listening sessions in my congregation because obviously this brought a lot of tension into the congregation, a lot of pain, actually, and this actually went through friendship. Friendships were broken over this in my congregation. This went through families. I mean, it was just heartbreaking for me to find out that, you know, on Thanksgiving last year, there were some families that had, you know, been together traditionally for many, many years. That year, they weren't in 2013 because of all of this. It's just heart-rending.
See, this is one of those things that bothers me the most about this whole case. You know, you're coming out of this just fine, and I know that you're going to be fine. You're going to end up in another congregation. It might be another denomination. It might be a Cathedral of Hope is what we're suggesting. But they only have an interim there right now. But just the fact that the church could take a congregation that was fully functional before and cause such a rift in it and cause families to not be speaking to each other and friends to not be talking to each other and not want to be in church with each other anymore, don't they realize that's much worse than anything that you could possibly have done in breaking? Didn't they break some rules, I guess, is what I'm asking?
Oh, ethically speaking, absolutely. There's no doubt in my mind. But, you know, this complainant, along with about maybe 25 or 30 people in the church that, you know, had been set against me for quite some time, they are very political. And they operated almost like a political action group, you know, with their bombardments of emails and phone calls and trying to get petitions going. And, I mean, it's unbelievable. So, yeah, you know, it's a conservative area. Lebanon is a conservative area, and my church was also on the conservative side. And so, you know, if you have agreements that go that deeply between a minister and a group of people in the church, I think that could be deadly. And so, you know, they probably knew that once this complaint was out that it would lead to that. But, you know, it was just so important for them to get rid of this minister, myself, that they were willing to, you know, to do it anyway.
What was the atmosphere like in a church before this happened? I mean, I'm assuming everyone knew that you have not one, but you have gay children.
Well, yes, that knowledge was out there. That was out there, and it was okay. It was accepted by everybody. I mean, even Dick Cheney as a gay daughter, and people were okay with that. Even the conservatives, to a degree.
Nice to compare yourself to Dick Cheney.
Only so, in this tiny moment.
Well, actually, it's funny. The reason I mentioned Dick Cheney is because at one point I did actually ask somebody on church council, you know, should I just come out and say something about this? You know, this is like, you know, the pink elephant in the room, right? And they said to me, no, just treat it like Dick Cheney does. You know, he never talks about it. You know, just ignore it. Just, you know, people know anyway. And so that's sort of what I did. I didn't want to rock the boat. I didn't want to cause a disturbance in the ministry, because our ministry was very vibrant. We had a great ministry. We were actually thinking about adding a third service, a third worship service this past fall.
Wow.
Before this all came down.
And surely you're not the only parent in this congregation who has a gay child.
No, actually not. No, there were several. And because it was pretty much known that I had gay children, we actually had more and more people coming in from the community that were either parents of gay children or were gay themselves. And so, you know, that was one of the beautiful things about the ministry, that we had a good diversity of people coming to especially our contemporary service.
I wonder, you know, when we look across it, like at federal laws, you know, the
Eric Holder?
Eric Holder,
yes.
Department of Justice, mm-hmm. Our Attorney General, came out with a sweeping statement yesterday at
big news.
HRC dinner in New York City. You know, that the federal government, through the Justice Department, where the Justice Department is able, will maximize optimally every right that a same-sex couple has who are married that would be exercised with a heterosexual couple.
Even if you reside in a state that doesn't recognize it.
Yeah. Right, like Texas.
Like us.
Right.
That's huge.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's really, really huge. Mm-hmm. And I'm just curious, you know, he refused to defend, and the president did as well through his instruction, to defend DOMA when it went to the Supreme Court. The Attorney General of Virginia has elected not to support the law in Virginia, and is going to support the plaintiffs, in fact. And it seems to me that there's the law, and this is true in the United Methodist Church, I think, the law, and then there's the way people feel about LGBT people. Mm-hmm. And so I'm most curious what your take is on how people really feel about LGBT people in the United Methodist Church versus how they feel about the law, and then the support of the law or the breaking of the law. Mm-hmm. You know, they're really two different things.
I totally understand. That's a good question. Well, I think because we are an Episcopal church, so far, up until recently, the church leadership really has tried to sweep this under the rug. You know, there was actually a motion on the floor at last General Conference in 2012 where they could have acknowledged that there's a sizable minority, that's what the language was, that disagrees with these discriminatory laws. Well, even that got shut down and voted down.
Wow.
However, I think what happened recently through recent events, and my trial was a big part of that, it really laid bare the division that exists in the church. We are a divided church over this. There are so many people in support of it, and you know, I'm seeing them now all the time. Every Sunday, I meet people, United Methodists, that are outraged. And so now you have all kinds of actions. Pastors stepping up. Prime example is Reverend McIlvaine here in Dallas, North Haven, who just announced he will do a gay wedding, and I actually met the couple today at the Cathedral of Hope. Yeah.
Jack and George.
Yeah.
Jack and George.
Now,
right. Yeah.
Who've been on this show many times.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Now, one of the things that that you said when we were talking before was that what if 1,000 ministers came out? First of all, how much did your defense cost? Not your defense. How much did the prosecution cost the Methodist Church?
The official number I heard was $100,000, about $100,000. But then it had been revised down, but I'm not sure the exact figure. But let's say $100,000.
So it's $100,000. And if 10 ministers did this, that's $1 million out of the church coffers.
Yeah.
If 100 people do this, that's, you know, $4 or $5 or $10 million.
Yeah.
What if 500 ministers, and there are that many who support this?
Actually, there are more than 1,000 that have officially signed a statement that they will do
at $100,000
apiece,
because they all have to have their own separate trial, right?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Otherwise, it'd be Salem.
Well,
you know, it'd be this big mess.
People are digging in their heels, though. That's the thing. I mean, Bishop Scott Jones just came out with a statement. He's the bishop of the Great Plains Annual Conference. He came up with a statement saying if there are 100 gay weddings in his annual conference, there will be 100 complaints followed by 100 trials.
Great.
Wow.
And his area will be bankrupt.
Oh, absolutely. Exactly. I mean, nobody takes him seriously, I guess, because how is he going to do that? How is he going to finance
that? Then there's
that?
Public relations. Bill McIlvaney is going through some chemotherapy right now. Mm-hmm. Jack and George have been together for 53 years.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, what better couple? I mean, yeah. I don't know of a stronger couple than those two. Mm-hmm. You talk to them, they finish each other's sentences. I mean, we just love the two of them. But the two of them together, because that's all there is. It's Jack and George. It's always Jack and George. It's never Jack. George. Jack and George. That's how much of a couple they are. And this minister, who they're threatening to take away his health care benefits, he's going through chemotherapy right now. Mm-hmm. What kind of public relations nightmare are they looking for?
Oh, that's a very good question. I sometimes think they don't think these things through. I think who's pushing this right now are the caucuses, the conservative caucuses, and the institutional church. I think they find themselves sort of at a loss and without leadership at the moment. And there are actually bishops that have now come out in support of gay marriage rights. And, you know, the one that invited me to minister in the California conference, Bishop Carcano, you know, she's openly defying church law by saying, well, you may have defrocked him over there on the East Coast, but he can come over here to the West Coast and minister as a United Methodist minister, which is incredible.
You've been too busy to actually take her up on the offer because you've been speaking every single weekend since then. Are you thinking seriously of taking her?
Oh, yeah. That's definitely on the table. We're still talking with her and the conference. And I was there about 4 weeks ago. I was in L.A., and I met with her and the cabinet and had the chance to speak at the Hollywood United Methodist Church, which was awesome. Yeah.
Are you the only reverend who's been put on trial for this in the Methodist Church?
Oh, none at all. No, not at all. There were people before me, like Jimmy Creech was defrocked, and
we had him on. Mm-hmm. Was that before you were on the show? When was he defrocked? It was in the 90s.
It was 1999 when he was finally defrocked. He went through two trials.
I came on it in 2000.
Yeah, yeah, and get
you
this.
Saw 2000, I think.
Early 2000.
And there's more. Right now, the church is trying another minister, Thomas Ogletree, Reverend Thomas Ogletree, on March 10th for the exact same thing, for doing the wedding of his own son.
Of his own son.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, this is one of those, I get it, where it's just, yeah, this minister, he did it in his church, people in his church were uncomfortable with it. This is your own son, it is in another state, mm-hmm. you never mentioned it in your church. Mm-hmm. And, you know, something I think sometimes you said you really didn't talk about your kids being gay or, you know, gay rights much and never mentioned the wedding. Which is sad, actually.
I did it in more subtle ways.
But you were compromising. I mean, you were definitely compromising. Yep. You were being diplomatic about the whole thing.
Right.
But with having your own kids who are gay, you know, sometimes you don't have to throw it out there. When you're close enough with people and they just see, these are your kids, they're good kids, we like your kids, that does more for gay rights sometimes than actually preaching about it.
Yeah.
So, and I think that's what you did. I do want to remind everybody it is Pledge Drive right now. The number is 972-647-1893. That's 972-647-1893.
And I just want to remind you of one of a nice premium that you can have. The Chinese Lantern Festival is back, and it goes all the way. Well, it's been here, and it lasts.
They just keep extending it. Yeah, it's so fabulous.
Yeah, to the 17th of February. Now, I've never been there, but I've seen pictures, and it just looks like a fabulous event to go to.
We've been, and it's just
a couple of times.
Yeah,
amazing.
While you're here, if it's not bitter cold, it is worth going over.
That's the excuse I've been using not to go, because it's been so cold. But you can for two pairs of tickets, you can get for a pledge of $35, you can get a pair of tickets.
So give us a call, 972-647-1893, 972-647-1893. Operators are standing by, literally.
Yep. Literally.
They're standing, because we don't have enough chairs here in the studio.
They're standing and waiting for your call.
Uh-huh.
Yes. They're multitasking
Josh,
here.
His hand is on the receiver. He's just waiting. We are talking today to, I almost said the Reverend Jimmy Creech. The Reverend Frank Schaefer, he is the Methodist minister who was defrocked the end of December. Now he's cashing in big on the speaking circuit.
Now, is it done? It's over with? You're defrocked.
I am defrocked, although I did file an appeal. So we're now due to put a brief in on that, and so it could come up at the Northeastern Jurisdictional Meeting in the spring. If not in the spring, probably in the fall.
So this is the whole Northeastern District where all of the states except Pennsylvania, and that one's questionable, that's probably going to be the next state, have same-sex marriage.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just want to make
that's
that clear.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
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 Huh. You actually had a trial. It was a two-day trial?
Two-day. Mm-hmm. Two-day
the
trial.
First day you presented evidence, and you had attorneys and other clergy mm-hmm. who were presenting for you.
Correct.
What was your argument?
On the first day, when it was about the guilty and innocence, I actually argued I may have violated church rules, but I did it out of compassion and love for my son. Mm-hmm. And I actually invoked the parable of the Good Samaritan, you know, where the Levite and the priest passed by this beaten-up person in the street because they couldn't risk getting blood on themselves because that would have made them ritually unclean. They couldn't have performed the services at the temple. But, of course, you know, Jesus teaches it in a way that the Samaritan, you know, had compassion, and he was the one that did the right thing by taking care of this person. And so my argument was that I just couldn't pass by on the other side like the priest and the Levite when I saw my son in need. And I explained to them what that meant, that, you know, he had been struggling even to a point of considering suicide after he heard these horrible church teachings, and I had to affirm him. I had to have compassion and help. And so it was an act of compassion, an act of love. And as Jesus teaches in this parable very clearly, you know, sometimes the rule of love goes over the rule of the law.
Well, and saving a life. What about that one?
Saving a life in the process.
Is that yeah. anywhere in there in any of the religious teachings?
yeah. Yeah. If it's not, it should be. That's right.
Maybe we should rewrite some of these laws. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Laron Landis and the late Patty Fink. Our guest today is the Reverend Frank Schaefer, and it is Pledge Drive. Give us a call, 972-647-1893. That's 972-647-1893. We'll be back with more right after this.
KNON depends on listener support, and now is the time for you to help keep this show on the air. If you like what you are hearing and want to show appreciation for your community radio station, then pick up the phone and call to make a pledge. Call 972-647-1893 or go online to knon.org. Don't wait for someone else to do it. Without the support of our listeners, there won't be any community radio on the air in North Texas. So take a few minutes to make a pledge. Call 972-647-1893 or go online to knon.org. KNON thanks you for your support.
This is Janice McCall from TCU, and I listen to the Lambda Week on 89.3 KNON FM, Dallas.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink and Laron Landis. Our guest today is the Reverend Frank Schaefer. And I'm not going to even say the defrocked Reverend, although you were talking about in church this morning how the word defrocked has kind of become...
Yeah, if I may retell that story real quickly. Last week I went to Binghamton, New York, and spoke at a church there. It was a United Methodist church, and there was one lady who actually stood up in front of the whole congregation, and a sweet old lady, right? You would have never expected anything like that. And she said, you know, I am so angry that they defrocked you. I'm using that word now as a cuss word. And she said, what the fuck is our church doing?
I'm with her.
I want to meet this woman.
I want to be her when I grow up.
I know, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, but wow. It's Binghamton.
Wow.
It's college town in New York. So
did you have to throw all your frocks out?
I still have them. I expected them to come by my house and, you know, ask to get all my frocks and my elders orders, but no, I still have all of that, you know. So I don't know what's going on.
I got a question. I know the answer, but I'm going to ask anyway. Do you feel defrocked by God?
Absolutely not. See, that's the thing.
Yeah.
In my heart, I'm still the same minister I always was. Mm-hmm. You know,
and that's all that matters.
And I do feel called by God, and that's why what I'm doing now, traveling to different churches every week, I'm still in ministry. And it feels like, you know, I'm preaching more now than I ever have mm-hmm. during my career as a minister, because there's always some off Sundays mm-hmm. where you have guest speakers or special programs. Now I'm preaching every Sunday.
It feels great. I want to tell you, I've been to a number of Cathedral of Hope services. They went all out today. Every choir member was there. Every orchestra member was there. There were no excuses. Wasn't that sound fabulous?
Oh, my goodness. They made me cry
uh-huh.
a couple of times. Yeah. Not just because of the music, but it was like it hit me as I was listening, as I was there and taking in the atmosphere. I was like, wow, this is how it's supposed to be,
you know?
This is what Jesus meant when he gathered all these different people, diverse backgrounds around himself. You know, it works. Mm-hmm. It actually works here.
And the outpouring, it was just amazing. I've never heard so much applause during a religious service before. Have you?
No, well, actually, lately I have. But, you know, yes, no, and, it was great, though.
And standing and sitting during a service, these were standing ovations. I mean, it was funny. Now, Josh and I go to a very small synagogue here in Dallas. And, Josh, there was one thing that I noticed about the music.
It was good.
But, yeah. uh-huh. But, you know, it's like everybody was singing the same tune. We don't always. And then when they were singing the same tune, not everybody was singing the same parts, but what they call it, harmony.
Oh. Uh-huh.
We call it just singing completely different tunes.
We do.
I mean,
no matter how it sounds.
But the music was just fabulous. It was just wonderful.
And it's the largest predominantly LGBT congregation in the nation.
Actually, in the world, I heard. Yeah.
I would think so.
It's amazing. And that's... orchestra they have a pit for the orchestra. Mm-hmm. I mean, which church has that? You know, this was very moving.
A gay church.
The big gay church. Yeah. has the orchestra.
Yeah.
If we ever get the chance, I'd love to talk with your son. But mm-hmm. what's been his reaction to all of this?
He actually, of course, he was very proud of me for, you know, finally speaking up and taking it to the church and defending him. You know, and he's very proud of me. But I think it was very hard for him to actually go through the trial. He was one of the witnesses. And when he was in the witness stand, let me tell you something. There were a lot of tears. Well, I lost it during his testimony, because he did share about his struggles as a child, as a young teenager, you know, with the messages he received from the church, and to a point where, you know, he never brought it up with me or with my wife even, because part of him was afraid, even though he knew us pretty well, he was afraid that there would be rejection. So he brought some gay friends along. I remember he invited them for movie night, and just to see how we would react, you know, what our reaction would be, because he wasn't quite 100% sure.
Your reaction was, oh, he has some nice friends.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. So for him to go through this emotionally again, to recall all of this that he did go through in the witness stand, was very hard on him. There are actually a couple of pictures from the trial where he's captured, and you can see it in his face. You know?
So what was the reaction? You must have been looking at the jurors who were other pastors.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
What was the reaction from them, knowing that, aside from what they did to you, what they were going to be doing to him?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I try to put myself into their shoes. One thing I noticed was that not a whole lot of them were really paying attention, especially when my son was in the witness stand.
Really?
But that's just the story. The church is not listening. You know, the leadership of the church, they're not really listening. They don't get it. They don't know that this is actually harmful to people, that people lose their lives over this. You know, they're putting people at risk. They don't get it. They don't listen. You know, I don't know why. It's really puzzling. But yeah, so they were all pastors of the Eastern Pennsylvania Conference, and they were subject to all of the witnesses and the testimony and the closing statements, opening statements, and all that. And yet they decided to, well, first of all, find me guilty, and then secondly, to give me this very strange verdict where I had 30 days basically to denounce gay marriage.
Yeah,
or
what was that about? So you had 30 days, and during that time you were just on suspension.
I was on suspension, exactly.
And at the end of the 30 days, what did they expect from you?
They wanted me to make a statement to the Board of Ordained Ministry of the Eastern Pennsylvania Conference that said, I can now uphold the discipline, which is our church law, in its entirety, which basically is saying, I denounce gay marriage, because if you uphold the law in its entirety, it means that you also uphold the discriminatory laws, which they knew I couldn't.
You're pretty sure they knew this was not an option.
I think they did it so that it would be on him to violate
a lot of people,
to defy the church again, and not for them to pronounce him sin as. They wanted him it to be on.
A lot of people agree with that.
And see, we give you the opportunity, and you're the one who blew the opportunity.
Exactly.
Huh. I think that's exactly what they did and planned to do it.
It's kind of wimpy, isn't it?
I mean, it's totally wimpy.
They really wanted to defrock me, but they didn't want to actually do it. They wanted me to do it to myself.
Right. How big was the jury? How many?
13. And 13 pastors.
Wow. What did the final vote come out to?
I think the vote for the verdict, the guilty verdict, was unanimous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So nobody could see your argument. Did you speak to any of them afterwards?
Well, no, I was actually under two charges. The first one was, did he do the wedding? And that one was unanimous. But then the second charge was...
Should you be defrocked for doing it?
No, that was the penalty. The second charge was, did I violate the order and discipline of the United Methodist Church? And that one was not unanimous. There were some people that disagreed with that. Okay. And actually, I did talk to one juror afterwards. She contacted me, and she said, Frank, I'm not going to apologize. This was actually the hardest thing I've ever had to do.
Good.
And I'm on your side. And I just couldn't, talk sense into the others. And so she actually invited me to speak at her church, so I will.
Oh,
so she's one of the ones who voted for...
Yes, mm-hmm.
For you for the second charge.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, and then the second part is the penalty, which that one was also a split vote. It wasn't... totally unanimous, and that basically said, 30 days, and at the end of the 30 days of suspension, you need to let us know if you're willing to uphold the discipline in its entirety. If not, we ask for your credentials.
Are there other things? Because, like Patty said, there are always these things that it's all the laws, and then the laws that have to do with the gay people that we don't really care about all that much. Are there any other laws in there that are there, they're old, they're antiquated, like Patty should be home washing dishes, and cooking dinner for her husband, that kind of thing?
There are a lot of laws in there that are basically not followed, or just followed by very few people. Like one of them is that you as a pastor have to make sure that when people transfer to another church, that you actually have to do certain things, which we never do as ministers. I've never done it.
Why don't you bring up some charges?
Yeah, really? Yeah. And that actually came up. Who can actually uphold the entire discipline? And so there was actually some pressure on me from friends, from my counsels and friends that said, well, just tell them what they want to hear. Just say you can uphold the entire discipline, because none of us can really do it. So it's the same thing. It's just say it. But I just couldn't do it.
In Judaism, one of the ways that the Orthodox get around that whole man shall not lie with another man thing, they say, yep, it's absolutely there, but not subject to interpretation, which I disagree with anyway. But they say it's there. But who can uphold everything? If you uphold all these other things, well, you're doing pretty good. And that's how most of them get around that one. Mm-hmm. It's just nobody upholds everything. And they're honest enough to understand that nobody does everything.
Yeah. Well, there are, in the Torah, there are provisions for instructions on how you can sell your daughter into slavery. Mm-hmm. Is anybody upholding that one?
I do.
Wait, I thought you were only 21.
Yeah, but when I have one, I've been planning.
Okay, okay.
I've been planning.
All right.
It's my retirement.
Yeah. Dairy Daddy.
Yeah, and for Laurent, he doesn't. We're selling Gabrielle. May only be five right now, but I think it's time.
That's interesting.
Can you talk a little bit about what this has felt like? Because initially when you did this, you weren't trying to be a celebrity or some national advocate for same-sex marriage or marriage equality. You're doing it for the love of your son. Mm-hmm. But because of what has happened, do you get this, why you've been elevated? I guess in a way as a hero to a lot of us, mm-hmm. Especially mm-hmm. gay men who have fathers mm-hmm. who have not been mm-hmm. accepting.
Mm-hmm. They had a kid.
Until they had a kid.
Yeah,
had a
kid. Happens a lot.
Well, you know, I feel very ambiguous about that, because everywhere I go now, you know, I get standing ovations and I get awards like I did today, and I feel ambiguous about it, because I mean, if there's one regret I have, is that I didn't speak up sooner. You know, I mean, I did try my very best to, you know, educate people and do it in subtle ways, and you know, used it in some sermons to really open people's minds, but I was never an advocate, and I regret that now, and I'm never going to go back to being a silent supporter. I always will be an advocate now. So there are people that really, other people that deserve these awards before me, that have been working so hard for years and years and putting, you know, their careers on the line. And so, you know, in a sense, I feel very ambiguous about it. But I think the reason why this story became big, even in the news, in the news media, is because people can relate to me. Because it could happen to anybody like that, you know. And we all struggle. We all try to, you know, to play it safe in a sense. You know, none of us want to get fired from their jobs and lose their jobs and careers, and then stand there without a paycheck, without health insurance, that kind of thing. We have children in school. I do, two of them. So, you know, it's natural for us, I think, to just sort of kind of, you know, try to not rock the boat and go with the flow and do what we can within, you know, that parameter. And so that's what I did, and I think people can relate to that, because it could happen to them. You know, what if their child asked them, "Dad, will you do my wedding?" You know, yeah. Then all of a sudden they're in the same boat.
A list of other things. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that I just don't get here is one of the main things that religions preach is family values. I know. I remember the first time I was on a radio show. I was in college, and it was a call-in show. And I remember this one question, and it's a whole lot of years ago. But they said, well, do your parents and your family accept you? And I thought it was the dumbest question. I just didn't even understand the question until I was meeting people later on mm-hmm. whose families didn't accept them.
Yeah.
And my answer was just, well, they're my family. It didn't even occur to me that they wouldn't accept. Mm-hmm. And
then you came to Texas.
And then I came to Texas and I met all you people. But yeah. You weren't thinking anything other than that. He's my kid.
Exactly. And I think there is family values, of course, is a big subject, even among conservatives, especially among conservatives.
Especially.
And I think there's a degree of hypocrisy in this, that, you know, that they're saying, well, but, you know, if we understand it was your son and everything, but, you know, there are more important things, and we can't always say yes to our children. And well, if you don't support your child when your child is going through a crisis to a point where they're considering suicide, there's something wrong with you. That's not family values. I'm sorry, but that doesn't fly with me. That's no excuse. So don't get me started, because I get really mad when I talk about that issue. But you know, and talking about...
You should. I mean, you should. Here's an entire church that spent $100,000 to prosecute you for supporting your kid.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. What kind of nonsense
yes,
is that?
It is. And that is a very important covenant, the covenant with your family. It's held very important in the church, in all churches, all religious communities that I know.
In all countries.
In all countries.
This country would fall apart if people didn't have families to support them.
Right. So to not even see the tension I was in and somehow respond with grace to that and leniency, even if they want to uphold the rules, is just beyond me. And now they're doing it again to Reverend Ogletree.
Yeah.
And it's for the same thing.
It's just amazing. It's the same hypocrisy we saw with the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. I mean, they're saying, no, it's better. It's best if you lie. Don't be honest. It's better for everybody if you lie. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's an insane kind of you know.
It is insane.
Logic.
Let's not have integrity anymore.
Right.
You know?
Don't tell the truth. Don't tell the truth.
Why do we need a church to teach integrity? if you get a job at a church in another denomination, how easy is it for your ordination to transfer with that little defrocking thing there?
That's a tiny glitch
in your
there,
permanent,
right?
Record card.
Yeah. I think it's like a dishonorable discharge or something, you know?
I'm not sure exactly technically how it would work in another denomination, but I know that I've gotten a lot of offers, especially from the UCC. Just last week, actually, I also talked at a UCC conference in Harrisburg, and the conference minister happened to be there of that whole area of the Central Pennsylvania UCC conference, and she gave me her card and said, "Frank, call me anytime. Mm-hmm. Call me anytime if you want to switch." You know, so
wow,
wonderful.
We are coming up, and by the way, Cathedral of Hope is UCC, and who knows? They're looking. That brings us to the end of another Lambda Weekly. Frank, I want to thank you so much.
Thank
for
you so much.
Thank you, and come back.
You should have seen. You should have seen the madhouse to get him here. Because this was the longest Cathedral of Hope service in their history.
And they've had long services.
We just got here. Thank you so much. The number 972-647-1893. It is Pledge Drive.
I was just going to say happy birthday to my husband. Today is his birthday. Happy birthday, Danny.
Happy birthday, Danny. That's mm-hmm. awesome.
Yeah.
That's great.
972-647-1893. Some of us will be here afterwards, can still take your calls. 972-647-1893 and support our... Yeah, we wouldn't be here and get great guests like this if it wasn't for KNON. So give us a call, 972-647-1893. Again, Frank, thanks so much for being here with us.
Well, thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.